Hello, Pod. I'm Chris Hewitt, and welcome to a very special edition of the Empire Podcast. And this one is dedicated to, well, frankly, the new issue of Empire Magazine. Yes, this is the big push. Yes, this is the big sell. But it also is a chance for an illuminating and entertaining conversation about something that, quite frankly, makes me feel really old. It is 25 years of the Star Wars prequels. That is the cover story on this month's Empire, the April edition available right now in all good, evil, and virtual newsagents. My God, I feel old, but it's true. The Phantom Menace, Star Wars Episode 1, The Phantom Menace is 25 years old this year. And so we have come together as a magazine to celebrate this and to celebrate the other two Star Wars prequels that George Lucas directed. Star Wars Episode 2, oh, what's it called? Attack of the something?
The five-star masterpiece that is Attack of the Clones.
We didn't give it five stars, did we?
No one would do that.
What idiot would do that? Attack of the Clones, and of course, Star Wars Episode 3, Revenge of the Sith in 2005. And joining me to discuss this and to talk through this incredible feature is none other than Empire's own features editor, Alex Godfrey. Sorry, award-winning features editor, Alex Godfrey. Bow down, bow your heads, you dogs.
I am doing this podcast for democracy.
This is how podcasts die, with thunderous applause.
True.
No thunderous applause for James Dyer. Hello, James.
Howard.
Me's a liking this.
Chuba. And if you think that we are going to use this as an excuse just to do impressions for the next half hour or 45 minutes or so, then you are absolutely 110% correct. Oh, I'm afraid the deflector shield will be quite operational by the time your friends arrive. Technically speaking, not from the prequels, but no. I'll allow it.
Interesting Emperor fact. He decided when he was doing that character that the word friend was a word that the Emperor would despise. So whenever he says friend, he just kind of spits it.
We'll be
the ante in between us.
We'll be dispensing James's Emperor facts every 2 minutes.
James, absolutely true.
Emperor facts.
Yeah.
I should get a little jingle. Ooh, it's a fact about me. Ooh,
it's Palpa time.
It's Palpa time. Boop, beep, 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 beep. If anyone's still listening to this, I'm going to be astonished. Yes, we should. because James, you got to speak to Ian McDiarmid himself.
Yeah, I got invited to his oval-shaped chamber. He span round in his throne with his cowl on. And actually, to be fair, he was sitting on a stool in his kitchen. And when he was telling me a story about the throne, he said, I'm rotating. I'm spinning on my chair. He said as he was doing it.
That's amazing.
That hint of authenticity.
That's amazing. And this is Emperor Sheev Palpatine.
Sheev. Yeah, Sheev.
To
happens.
Give him his first name. But they don't actually call him Sheev or Sheev.
No one refers to the Emperor by
Who
his first
would
name.
Who call him by his first yeah. name?
All right, Sheev, mate. How's it going? All right, son.
Out a week, and the disrespect is palpable for Palpatine. It's Palpatine.
Yeah. He told me the story of Darth Plagueis the Wise.
The Wise.
He didn't, did he?
No.
No.
Was he wearing a hoodie when you spoke?
He might have been. I don't know.
Oh, it was not.
Also, no, I was not physically in his kitchen. So we spoke, and we wouldn't have spoke over the Zoom, but the Emperor does not Zoom. The Emperor phones.
Oh, okay.
So we spoke on the phone.
Oh, so you didn't actually see him?
I did not see his face.
Right. Oh, I
hidden
see.
Hidden as it was behind a cowl.
Then how do you know it was him?
I don't, really. Could have been anyone. Could have been anyone.
Like the time you were about to interview Ewan McGregor and I called
up. Oh, that was Nick. Nick was about
Nick?
To... And you go, Nicholas, I had the hair ground! It's Ewan McGregor! It doesn't sound anything like that, but that was your impression.
You've misremembered slightly, but yes, he thought it was Ewan McGregor. And
Did you do an entire interview with him?
No, I let him off the hook after about a minute. But
because Ewan was on hold.
And also, I did that once with James. Yeah. I did a couple of times with James. Once I pretended to be Penelope Cruz. The second time was when I pretended to be Arnold. Do you remember? And I called
only
up.
Only very vaguely.
Because I knew... This is a very dangerous game to play, by the way, because... you could actually stop the real person from calling in, but this is back in the days when we used to do interviews in the office, and you would tell people, I've got an interview with Arnold Schwarzenegger at 5 p.m. so everyone please be quiet because he's going to call this phone. And so I would then be aware of that, and I would go into another room and I would call James's number at like 5:1 and I would pretend to be the person that he was talking to and see how long I could string them along. But the Arnold one was proper because, do you remember, I pretended to be his publicist?
Yes, you did. And you put on this really obsequious American accent.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes. Oh, my God. I totally fell for that one.
Yeah. And then I went, I'm just passing over to Arnold now. And then the phone got over. And then, hello, James. It's Arnold here. Hello. How are you doing?
Yeah.
Anyway, Star Wars. Well,
at the risk of cancellation.
Yes.
What's your Penelope Cruz?
Oh, it was a very, very quick, very, very quick, high-pitched, hola, this is Penelope Cruz, yeah. Fire away.
That's her catchphrase. That's what she says.
That's when he realised.
I'm still convinced it was her. Absolutely convinced. The best part of that story is that she ultimately couldn't do the interview, and she called me to apologise to tell me why she couldn't do the interview.
And you hung up, like...
grandmother, and I very went, "Oh, fuck off, Chris," and put the phone down.
Star Wars.
Okay.
So the prequels are 25 years old, and we should probably address the bantha in the room before we get into talking about these movies, because we have interesting, complicated relationships with these films. There's been one in particular for me. The second one, what's it called?
Attack of the Clones.
Attack of the Clones. That's the one. Gave it 5 stars when it first came out in 2002. Was roundly derided by the internet. retracted the review. Then waited 25 years. Then was persuaded by a faction of the internet that I was right in the first place. And now want me to retract the retraction. But anyway,
can I ask you about that? Can I ask you about it?
Yes, of course you can. What happened?
When you wrote it. Yes. In the heat of the moment, you felt what you felt.
I said what I said.
How long did it take you to decide that maybe what you wrote wasn't entirely true? And how much of that was affected by what other people
said? Can I also, before you answer that question, can I weigh in slightly and take my share of responsibility for this? Because there were a number of people egging Chris on to do this. And I was
Like naughty children.
So for a laugh?
I've distanced myself from it since and denied it, but I should say... Again, I think you have to understand, like, Star Wars for men of a certain age and people of a certain age generally, like, is so magical. And for all of its flaws, it's very easy to get swept up in the moment. And, you know, it was the Imperial March at the end. It was Yoda with a lightsaber. It was all that kind of stuff.
Oh, Yoda with the lightsaber, mate.
The fundamental flaws of that incredibly flawed film were almost secondary to the magic of watching this play out for the very, very first time.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, I speak for everyone, we put all our critical appraisals on hold, mm-hmm. and we were kids again, mm-hmm. and we were so excited by it, and we came out, and it's a 5-star masterpiece! Of course, it's not, it's terrible, but it's... I genuinely think Attack of the Clones is a bad film, but I also, in the same breath, will say I absolutely love it, even though it's a bad film.
See what I mean? Complicated relationship.
There's so much in it that's just magical, and there's so much in it that's terrible. Like Anakin's...
Anakin!
So Anakin's... My you've grown, more beautiful, is a line that obviously I use regularly. But it may be the worst moment in the whole of cinema, and yet it's also just brilliant, and I howl with laughter, and it's fabulous. Mm. So, like I say, complicated relationships. But anyway, sorry.
Complicated relationships.
Go back to Chris. Chris, you are the man who carries the can for all of our sins.
I do. So, yeah.
Yeah, I'm just interested in the arc of your relationship with that film.
There's a lot going on with that review. We actually did a piece, because some people did ask... In the wake of this issue being released, why we didn't do a piece addressing that review. We did it in a previous magazine, some while ago.
Chris's mea culpa.
I've long wanted to do it as a oral history. Interviewing all the people
review.
Of the review, like interviewing the people who kind of...
Made you do it.
Not made me do it, because I made myself do it. No one held a gun or a lightsaber to my head or a blaster.
There was context to it.
There was context, yeah. Definitely. I was too young. I was only in my first... I hadn't even been at Empire 2 years.
Padawan apprentice.
And this was the biggest review I had been given. And I think I was too young. I don't like writing reviews anyway. I've kind of stepped back from that over the last few years.
I don't know if you were too young. I mean, we were saying before we were rolling, how hard it was, and to some extent still is, but definitely then, to have been objective at that time about Star Wars.
Impossible.
When we grew up with it, we had so much affection for it, so much nostalgia for it. And what you were saying, James, just now, I think so much of the fabric of what happens in Star Wars and in these films, in terms of the world and the characters and the music and the style and the tone, does a lot of heavy lifting. Mm. And it can distract you from some of the stuff that's maybe not so good. And also you want so much to like it as a non-objective viewer of those films that you forgive so much, maybe in the heat of the moment. And that's what happened, I think, quite a lot.
That's a little bit what happened.
It is. But I think, you know, and I'm sure it's the same for you guys. Like, for me, the original trilogy are almost like, they are such seminal artifacts of my childhood that they're among my favorite things in all of creation, just because everything from the sound design to the music to the feel to the characters, all of it just reminds me of home in such a way that I cannot be objective with it. And so coming into the prequels, even when I watched The Phantom Menace, some people report, oh, I came out The Phantom Menace, I was devastated. And all I could think was, I have just seen a Star Wars. Oh my God. Like, there was no criticism in that. It was just, I was swept up in the magic of it all. And I think all three of those films, to greater or lesser extent, did that for me then and do it for me now. And I've watched them so, so many times. And each time, like, there'll be the critical part of me that'll be like, well, this is bad dialogue. This is terribly directed. And oh my God, an actual practical set would have killed you. But none of that really matters.
Doesn't matter.
Because the magic is still there.
And this is a cheesy segue, but it's true. That's why we've done this issue. And that's how we've presented it. That's the point.
Yeah, I have to say, I didn't know we were doing this, and then when I found out we were doing this, I was obviously furious. No, I was genuinely delighted when I heard we were doing this, and I was really excited about it because of that. Yes, we have that long, complicated relationship with the prequels, and I wouldn't say they're my favorite Star Wars films by any stretch of the imagination, but by God, there are things about these movies that I deeply, deeply love, and I was very, very excited to get to write about some of those things and to interview some people about certain aspects of the movies as well. And also, quite frankly, we're not saying that these are the greatest movies ever made or the greatest Star Wars movies ever made. This is a celebration of 25 years of the prequels. It's also an acknowledgement that there is an audience out there. And this is something I have been aware of over the last 10, 15 years or whatever, of people who have grown up with these movies and do have the relationship with these films that we have with the original trilogy. And there are going to be people who grew up 5, 10 years from now who have the same relationship with the two sequel movies that were made, The Force Awakens and The Last Jedi, the final Star Wars movie. And you know, they will hold those films as their North Star as well. So I was really, really, really happy to do this. I'm really, really glad that we are doing this and we have done this. Should we talk about some of the stuff that's in this? Because this is an amazing features section, Alex, that you nearly killed yourself doing.
31 pages of absolute goodness. I'm still amazed at what we managed to get done. We got the entire A-list cast, really, to talk to us. A lot of them haven't spoken about it in years and certainly haven't done specific Star Wars interviews.
Apart from maybe snatched questions at the end of interviews, like interviewing Natalie Portman about Thor.
I don't recall reading a post-publicity cycle interview with Natalie Portman about Star Wars.
No. I mean, you know, we started getting, you know, we got one person, then another person. You know, we got, let me talk off the top of my head. Correct me if I'm wrong here, Chris, you got it. You got the magazine in front of you, but we got Liam Neeson, we got Ewan McGregor, we got Hayden Christensen, Ian McDermott, Natalie Portman, Samuel L. Jackson. I mean,
Brian Blessed.
Brian bloody Blessed.
Did you get Hugh Quarcy?
Oh, sorry, Hugh. And we did incredible photo shoots with Hayden Christensen and Ian McDermott. And I got to say, I think we spoke to Hayden about what we've just been talking about, some of the criticism the film's got and some of the criticism that he got. And, you know, we can't pretend that wasn't the case. But he talked about that, and he also talked about the fact that they have been reappraised or have been embraced in different ways since then. Mm-hmm. And, you know, context.
It's another thing I love. I love the fact that the likes of Ahsoka and even things like Rian Johnson, the Canto Bight sequence in The Last Jedi, the last Star Wars movie, is very prequels inspired, and I think is designed for people who grew up on the prequels.
Was the pristine quality that the prequels have, not the used universe that we're used to from the original trilogy.
And it
did have a new, shiny, fresh out of the packaging texture to it, which I guess, you know, you want, because the prequels are set earlier and they feel, they have a different texture to them, but they're still recognisably Star Wars. And all of the beats that you wanted were there. And The Phantom Menace has taken quite a lot of shit, some of it quite rightly. But I still think that is, and you know, it was for a long time, it was like, Phantom Menace is terrible, the other two are great. Phantom Menace, I'm going to say this right now, is the best of the prequels. I think it works the best. I think it's the most consistent. It definitely has its issues, but it also has the greatest moments of all. And the Duel of the Fates, for example, the pod race, all of these great moments you have in there. I will go to bat for the Phantom Menace.
Have you seen Attack of the Clones?
I have seen Attack of the Clones.
Phantom Menace is the most fun to watch. And it is insane. It is such a bonkers, loopy piece of work. Mm. Visually, tonally, everything about it is nuts. I watched it again last night. And I will say for that, and the trilogy as a whole, it's a singular vision, you know. It's George Lucas. Yeah.
He's not getting notes.
No.
Or if he's ignoring them.
He's not, but he's going off on one. For better or worse, you know, midichlorians, whatever. There's a lot of shit you can throw at it. Fair enough. But for better or worse, he is doing exactly what he wants to do at that point in his life with all the control he had. And in a world today where, regardless of quality, good or bad, a lot of fantasy films and action films and action fantasy films kind of similar in a lot of ways, you know. I'm not saying they're all cookie-cutter films, but they're not generally incredibly surprising or experimental. And these were. Like I say, for better or worse, I mean, you can weigh out the good and bad. There's a lot of good about them.
Yeah.
And we have never seen films that looked and felt quite like these before or afterwards.
But there's also, there's a good reason for that, which you've kind of alluded to, is that George Lucas in the original trilogy, and George Lucas is a kind of an out there storyteller, but he was heavily reined in that original trilogy. But without a producer to pull him back, Rick McCallum was very much not someone to rein George in. I feel like he was off the leash in a way that no one gave him notes. And as you say, if they did, he ignored them. You know, he was beholden to absolutely no one. And he did the vision that, for better or worse, he told the story he wanted to tell for the first time. Mm-hmm. And I think that's why some of it is so absolutely wild.
Yeah, and it's a good story. Not all of it brilliantly told, but the story...
Classic template, in many ways. Mm.
Yeah.
I mean, it's flawed from the get-go. Like, what he's doing is a flawed idea. You are taking the most iconic villain in the history of cinema, and you are demystifying him by showing him as Jake Lloyd. Like that, and that is a risky move from the get-go.
Well, it's not just that. I almost have a bigger problem with Palpatine, because I can't really connect Jake Lloyd and Hayden Christensen to Darth Vader, right? I don't see them as the same. So I go, okay, this is the backstory you're telling and the way you're telling it. And then they throw in Darth Vader in his costume at the end and go, okay, whatever, fine, whatever you say. Palpatine, same actor, right? Same character. Backstory is the enemy of imagination for me, Nothing that they could have done could have beaten what I had in my mind, which is I don't fucking know where Palpatine came from, what he was. Never did I want to see him as just a bloke, a politician, you know, and all the politics and all that. I never wanted to see that. I just liked him as this weird, anonymous, evil ghoul. And that was as good as it gets. However, having said that...
However!
What they made the decision to do it, and I think what George did with it, was really, really good, meaty material, really interesting political stuff explored there. And Ian McDiarmid, fucking brilliant in that prequel trilogy. So I go, okay, this isn't what I necessarily wanted or what we needed, but it exists, and I went with it. And I love watching Palpatine in those three films. I love it.
But also, we still don't know where he came from. It's an emperor origin story, as in it's the origin story of how he became the emperor. But we know very little about how he became so proficient in the dark side. I mean, obviously, there's the strong hint that he was the one who killed Darth Plagueis the Wise.
Yes.
He's a mystery. He still is a mystery. He's a giant, giant question mark.
Sheathed him.
Yes, he must have sheathed him in the back, prison style. Is it Palpa time? Is it time for an Emperor fact, James? Well, Palpa time.
I'll give you one Emperor fact, I love the idea, and Dimit talks about this, that Palpatine, Senator Palpatine, is the mask. Like Sidious is who he is. And he's wearing like a human mask. And I think the note that Lucas gave him was, think of your own eyes, Ian's eyes, as fake. They're like glasses. Like, he's behind those eyes. That is not his face. Those are not his expressions. Like, he is Sidious. The only thing about this that doesn't work for me, and this is the one decision, and I get why he had to do it, but it bothers me, is that when they did the prosthetics for...
the Mace Windu fight.
When they did the prosthetics for Jedi, it was all about aging. Those prosthetics were designed to show him the products of aging to make him look ancient.
Yeah.
And then the idea that it's reflected force lightning off Mace Windu's lightsaber is just fucking stupid.
Does that, because he doesn't get those eyes and that face
it's
until
just
then.
It's just nonsense.
It's battle damage.
Yeah, it looks dreadful. And I'm like, I'm sure there was a way that they could have done it more gracefully. Like,
I thought
like
it was a mask.
Like it was all illusion. And actually, that's just what he looks like. And it's that the dark side has taken its toll. Mm. That would have been better. Like the you know, the unlimited power, all of that. That whole sequence is so much fun, but also just terrible.
But that's the problem with the midichlorians, and that it's explaining everything.
Don't explain this shit. Yeah.
But like I said, it's fucking good fun to watch.
It is good fun. And so, like watching him when he flicks the lightsaber out, somersaults over his desk, like takes out Kit Fisto, doesn't give a shit. Like,
does he? Until we see a body, I don't know. If Sam Jackson's clinging to the idea that Mace Windu's still alive, then goddamn it.
He's clinging to a ledge is what he's clinging to. He's still out there.
So he says in our issue.
Biding his time.
Are we going to get a prequel trilogy where we see Sheev Palpatine as a little boy?
We might as well.
Get him dead!
Might as well. It leads unerringly to the Acolyte. Anyway, so let's go through. This is 25 things we celebrated about the Star Wars prequels. And 25 is Attack of the Memes, which is, all the great memes that have come out of it.
But we're going backwards.
We're going backwards. I want to finish off at number one, like a countdown, like some sort of pop chart type thing. So 24 is Palpatine. It is Ian McDiarmid. You interviewed him in his kitchen. The ultimate villain of the Star Wars franchise, some would say, including him, I'm guessing.
Yeah, it can all be traced back to him. And obviously, thanks to J.J. Abrams, the entire saga actually has become the Emperor's saga, hasn't it?
How?
Because, there was a film that he talked about making and ultimately never made, which was the third sequel film. But had he been able to make one, I believe he would have made, somehow Palpatine would have returned.
That sounds like a terrible idea.
It does, doesn't it?
No, I don't think they should pursue that at all.
That was just a shame.
Yes, just a shame. But I do love him. He's so good. We'll be watching your career with great interest.
Again, a great line.
James, did you get any sense of, were you sort of gleefully listening as Palpatine's voice came through when you spoke to him?
Well, because he sounds nothing. Well, no, he sounds a lot like Senator Palpatine.
Yeah.
Like, he's a very sort of jovial, quite lovey theatre actor, and he speaks very well. You know, so he's got that kind of friendly, avuncular voice, not the kind of like, although I did speak to him about like what people get him to say. And if the thing people ask him to say most is, do it.
Do it.
Do it. And he does the laugh sometimes. He didn't do it for me, but I've heard him do the laugh before because I spoke to him at Celebration one year, and he did the laugh a few times that year because when they announced The Rise of Skywalker, the film that was never made, that they did a fake trailer, but at the end, you hear Palpatine's laugh, and McDiarmid walked out and just went, roll it again. And everyone was like, ah! And lost their shit. It was mad.
And my heart sunk.
And we all died slightly inside. he's magnificent. He is absolutely magnificent. And his stories are great.
He understood the assignment.
He 100% did. And I just love the fact that, because, they all knew each other. Like, he was on set of Jedi, obviously, doing his stuff. And he just ran into Sebastian Shaw. Had no idea why he was there, because none of them had the full script. And he was like, oh, darling, what are you doing here? And Sebastian Shaw was like, I have no idea. It's something to do with space, It's just, I thought it was fascinating. They just, no idea. Didn't realize that he was, going to be the
unmasked. He was 12 when he played the Emperor for the first time, wasn't he, as well?
Pretty much. Like, he was a really young man when he was playing the Emperor at his most...
He was not 12.
No, not quite 12. But he also wasn't a chimpanzee, which is kind of partly what the Emperor was in Empire Strikes Back.
Yes. So. Who voices the Emperor initially? Clive Revel.
It's Clive Revel. Clive voices, Revel. And it's Marjorie Easton on as the face, but the eyes are a chimpanzee's eyes.
Yes, Clive Revel, one of the many murderers in Columbo. Anyway.
That's funny, because you asked Ian McDiarmid about that. You said originally it was the chimpanzee's eyes and Marjorie Easton's face and Clive Revel's voice, and he said something like, yes, I don't understand why they didn't carry on with that combination.
Chimpanzee was notoriously hard to direct. Massive diva.
There you go.
Yeah.
23 is Order 66. We're speaking about Palpatine.
Order 66.
Well, you wrote that one, Chris.
I did write that one. I was very excited to write about this one because I think Order 66 is one of the greatest sequences in all of Star Wars.
Yes.
And I think some of the CG perhaps hasn't held up, and perhaps it might have worked to have been introduced to some of the Jedi who could kill before they get bumped off.
Justice for
the likes of Aayla Secura, people like that who we see on screen. Yaddle doesn't get killed on.
Yaddle
on
escapes.
Screen.
Oh yes. The Yaddle spin-off movie is still to be made, but it is coming.
Isn't Yaddle dead? Sure, Yaddle's dead.
Pardon?
Sure, Yaddle's dead. But it feels like you're watching one of the montages at the end of The Godfather, The Godfather Part 2, where cleaning house. And there's so much great stuff going on there. There's the death of Plo Koon, my boy Ki-Adi-Mundi.
Yes.
And, you know, and of course, there's just such a sense of operatic, epic tragedy to it all. It does also culminate, we should say, in one of the worst line readings in the history of
Master
cinema.
Master Skywalker.
There are too many of them. What should we go to do? 22, Mace Windu. We have a very, very short, but to the point interview with Sam Jackson, in which we asked him four questions and he replied in all caps to all four of them.
And over text.
We printed them. And yes, very, very Sam Jackson.
I think I tallied up 17 words in total. But there is genuinely so much personality in those 17 words. He says a lot. The internet has gone crazy. What more could you ask?
What more could you ask, indeed? And he is convinced that Mace Windu is not dead.
Convinced, or he wants a Disney Plus series.
I say give the man a Disney Plus series.
I agree.
After all, you gave him a Nick Fury series and look how that turned out. 21.
Can I just say?
Yes.
If they do it well, if they did it well, I could see an old man Logan type Mace Windu series, you know.
Yeah.
Decades later, him wandering around. They hinted that's what sort of Kenobi was going to be at the beginning of that show and turned out not quite to be like that. But there could be something. There is a world where there could be a good Mace Windu series in this.
Do you think he'd be in disguise? Like, he could have, like, the moustache and Jerry Curl wig that Jules has in Pulp Fiction, and that could be his I'm in disguise, I'm laying low outfit.
No.
No?
No. 21 is a little piece I wrote about George Lucas's cameo, because there he is, as Baron Papanoida.
A Night at the Opera.
Shows up in an episode of The Clone Wars, mm-hmm. alongside George Lucas's real-life daughter as well. Number 20 is a little piece about the politics, because it's quite complex and quite rich.
Nothing says kid-friendly like the taxation of trade routes.
Yes, right away. Right away, five-year-olds knew they were in for a roller coaster ride.
The trilogy gets a lot of flack for the politics because of the dialogue and some of the characters. But as I said before, the political story is good.
And it was gutted by default, because obviously Jar Jar was going to have a lot more to do in Attack of the Clones. But because of the negative reaction to The Phantom Menace, his scenes got heavily cut back. And he is absolutely essential to the political progress of the story.
I do wish that George had stuck to his guns.
Yeah, so do I. I've got no issues with Jar Jar.
More interesting. Yeah,
we'll get on to Jar Jar in a second. Number 19 is the duel on Mustafar. That's a great sequence.
It holds up. I watched it last night. It's great.
It is, but it's no Duel of the Fates.
It's very different.
It is very different.
Actually, I watched them both last night. They serve very different purposes, and tonally they're very, very different.
Well, Duel of the Fates has that classic Star Wars construction where it's intercut with a ground battle and a space battle. And the space battle is terrible, and the ground battle isn't great, but it is the single greatest lightsaber fight in the entire saga.
You could argue that
The Last Jedi has a pretty exceptional one.
And it depends what you're talking about choreography, but for me...
For emotional content, and Jedi, yeah.
Yeah.
I totally see what you're saying. But there's something about certainly the choreography, the spectacle, the emotional experience for us as the viewer that I think you'll have.
Yeah, but Mustafar for me, and so this is a sequence we've sort of dissected over a couple of pages with some of the people who worked on it. You know, we all knew this big volcano fight between these two guys was happening.
The floor is lava.
Yeah. Lucas
literally.
Lucas had hinted at it for years and years and years, back in the 80s, I think. And it delivers. It pretty much delivers. It's hardcore. It gets to it. It's brutal. It is pretty emotional. It works for me. And it's, as Rick McCallum, the producer of those prequels, we spoke to him for that sequence. And as he said to us, Hayden Christensen exploding into a ball of fire at the end of it is unfucking believable. It's true.
He's not wrong.
It's over, Anakin. I have the high ground.
That's a very, very peculiar point to latch onto. Like, I have the higher ground, therefore I will absolutely win.
Really? Yeah. Yeah. Admittedly, Darth Maul had the high ground. But then he was able to, because he hadn't had his limbs cut off, so he was able to jump over Darth Maul, and he was a much younger man then as well. Number 18. You want to buy some death sticks?
Yeah.
You don't want to sell me death sticks.
Ian Frear spoke to
Ilan Sleaze-Bagano.
I was so jealous that someone else got to do this, because Ilan Sleaze-Bagano is the standout character. Forget Dexter Jetster from Attack of the Clones. It is Ilan Sleazebagina.
Forget Yoda.
Who gives a shit about that loser? Or Count Dooku. It's all about Ilan Sleazebagina. Give this guy his Disney Plus series. That's what I wanted.
Well, you gutted it just because you didn't get the chance to do the impression of him to him.
I would have done it to his
I
face.
Know you would have done.
Yeah. I did it to Ewan.
Did you?
Mm.
When?
I was also pretending to be Ewan at the time. It was very confusing. But yes, do love a bit of Ilan Sleazebagina, and I do hope that he has gone home and rethought his life. Number 17.
Well, after appearing in Attack of the Clones.
I went home and rethought my life after reviewing Attack of the Clones. Number 17, Obi-Wan Kenobi. Obi-Wan Kenobi, Ewan McGregor.
Obi-Wan Kenobi.
Obi-Wan Kenobi.
Obi-Wan,
Obi-Wan Kenobi. Kenobi. Ewan McGregor looks back on the Jedi Sage. Oh, that's a... No, Jedi's cooked. A Jedi Sage standout prequel scenes. So we have Ben. Ben, talk to Ewan. That's exciting. Yeah. So where do we stand on... Very quickly, where do we stand on Ewan in the prequels? He's probably his own harshest critic, I would say, in certain ways.
I think he's fun in the first one, but he's more of, you know, second fiddle to Liam Neeson, and he's supposed to just stand there and go, what should we do? And all this stuff. But his character grows, and I think his performance grows over the course of the trilogy, you know, regardless of, you know, some of the films and some of the content. You know, when you get to the end, you get to that Mustafar sequence, it's fucking brilliant.
You were supposed to be the chosen one. Like, you feel it. You feel his disappointment that he wanted Anakin to be something that he ultimately was not.
He's devastated. He is also merciless. Like I say, I watched that last night. He chops him in half.
Yeah.
Watches him explode into a ball of flames.
Yeah.
Watches for a bit more, then walks off.
Yeah.
Just walks off.
That shit is
finish
cold.
The job, James.
Yeah.
He should have finished the job.
Well, he just, you know, he doesn't kindly put him down like you would do if you hit a badger in the road. He just watches.
He doesn't put him out of his misery. He just leaves him there.
Yeah.
Pillow over the face.
Yeah.
Leaves him there for Palpatine to
absolutely
come and,
brutal.
Mechanize him.
Yeah, if he'd finished the job, then none of the bad shit would have happened, is all I'm saying. Or yes, Order 66 had already happened, but then they could have executed Order 67, which was give the Jedi a nice back rub.
Well, Amidala promoted Palpatine. Mace Windu didn't kill him when he had the chance. It's all these idiots' fault.
Yep. Fucking idiots. And don't get me started in Order 69. Number 16 is the glitzy bit parts of the prequel trilogy. So lots of people were in it kind of before they were famous. The likes of Keira Knightley, Dominic West, Sally Hawkins, Richard Armitage.
That's
number
right.
15 is Amidala's amazing costumes. Number 14 is Jar Jar Binks. And I wrote this piece because I kind of made a case for Jar Jar Binks, a case for the defense. He's a guilty? No, Jar Jar, you're not a guilty because he's had a lot of shit, Jar Jar. And obviously, Ahmed Best has had a lot of shit as well over the years. And Star Wars fans, as we know, very rarely cover themselves in glory when it comes to treating actors with respect. But, you know, yes, there's probably too much Jar Jar in The Phantom Menace, but I watched this movie years and years ago with my young niece at the time, and she absolutely flipped for Jar Jar. And I was like, oh, okay, this is what George was going for. Whereas we were, at the time, actively appalled by him. But he absolutely does. He does serve a purpose in the original, in the Phantom Menace. And I do genuinely wish that George had stuck to his guns. It's very unlike him. You know, we're talking about this singular vision.
He was in any way prepared for the negative response to that character. Because you have to understand, like, he became obsessed with the idea of digital protagonists from the special editions when he put in the Jabba the Hutt sequence.
Yeah.
When he put him in there, the thought of being able to do a purely digital character, he thought this was incredible, groundbreaking filmmaking, which is why he leaned so hard into Jar Jar. And then to have that dream shattered when everyone was furious at this character, I think it really took the wind out of his sails.
But they were furious at the character. They weren't furious at the work, which I contend is still great work.
Yeah.
He's still a great CG character.
And
still
he doesn't abandon CG characters by any stretch.
No, he really doesn't.
But he just dials Jar Jar way down.
Yeah.
He does. No, I he recoiled. The criticism really stung him, you can tell, on that one.
He took that badly.
But I say justice for Jar Jar. And at the end, I say, give the guys his own show, for fuck's sake. Give everyone their own show, that's what I say. Ilan Sleazebagina, 8-part limited series. Yes, please. Thank you very much indeed. 13, Yoda versus Dooku. What's that from? Is that
Don't
from
know.
A film?
Don't know.
Hard to say.
Okay.
Don't remember it.
Sounds good. It sounds like the sort of thing that might convince someone to give a movie 5 stars. Yoda with a lightsaber, this is what we've all been wanting to see again, since The Empire Strikes Back, isn't it?
It has massively theatrical moments. It's clear this will not be decided by our skill with the Force.
It's a terrible Yoda.
It is. What is it? Is it with our ability with the Force? With our skills with the lightsaber. It's like, show, don't tell, Chris. Show, don't tell.
Oh, no, I love that line. I love that line. And Christopher Lee absolutely nails it.
But they set it up nicely. Like when Ewan says to Anakin, it's like, you know, you almost be as good as Master Yoda. And Anakin's like, what? Master Yoda? I said, yes. Foreshadowing, mate.
Not even Master Yoda has a midichlorian count that high.
It's a crazy bit of fan service, isn't it? Because, yeah, I remember watching that. I remember that unfolding in front of me for the first time I saw Attack of the Clones and thinking, oh, God, they're doing it. Look at the state of this. But at the same time, we all wanted to see
it. But also, Yoda's a boss. He doesn't even draw the lightsaber. He just holds his hand out, sort of like you force grabs it. Yeah.
And he
comes in like with his walking stick, and then he's somersaulting off the walls.
Yeah, you're watching two pensioners fight. Yeah. If you hung outside an East London pub of a Saturday night, you would eventually see two pensioners fight, but they wouldn't have
like
the grace of these guys.
It would be more like Alec Guinness and Dave Prowse at the end.
It would be a lot of Guinness.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But you make an interesting point there. It's like if you look at Prowse in Guinness in that fight, like the choreography there is basically non-existent.
Choreography is generous.
It is all emotion and character and dialogue and while they're swinging sticks.
And it works.
And it works.
You're a part of the Rebel Alliance, a traitor.
Take him away.
When last we met.
Oh, dearie me.
I told you she'd never consciously betrayed a rebellion.
Obi-Wan never told you what happened to your father.
The best thing is, all of these scenes are available on the internet, on YouTube, with Prowse's original dialogue, and it is magnificent.
It is magnificent.
Yeah.
Yoda versus Dooku, I mean, the whole 5-star thing, because we haven't really properly addressed it. Yes, that was a big part of it, and yes, Mark Denning at the time did sidle up to me, and I was writing a 4-star review that I had agreed with Alan Morrison, who was about to head off on holiday and had agreed with me beforehand. He was like, 4 stars? Yeah. And I went, 4 stars. Absolutely. I'm going to give it 4 stars. And then Dinning sidled up to me and went, Yoda with a lightsaber, mate. Oh, it was brilliant. Give it 5 stars. And I was like, you know what? Fucking Yoda did have a lightsaber. You're absolutely right. He did have a fucking lightsaber. That's a 5-star film. The rest is history. But there's other stuff in Attack of the Clones that I truly, truly love. The epic scope of the final battle is incredible. The ominous overtones, the way that the Imperial March comes in at the end is tremendous. You've begun this clone war as, and then it goes all epic. It's beautiful. Then there's some truly dreadful stuff, but I try to overlook that in my 5-star review. Anyway, number 12, the Battle of Geonosis. Speaking of Attack of the Clones. This party is over. Good, solid, great character design. Everyone gets to shine on the green screen backlot, and then it's composited lovingly into the scene. That's nice. Number 11. It's Grievous, General Grievous.
That was his performance on Who Wants to Be a Millionaire.
Oh, you got to love a bit of General Grievous.
Nick's in love with General Grievous. He's on one of our two covers.
He is. Oh, Wheezy.
Speaking of people who that we love, Qui-Gon Jinn is at number 10.
Anakin.
I interviewed Liam Neeson for this. Big Liam. He's currently stuck up a mountain shooting the Ice Road 2, I believe. But nevertheless, we managed to connect using the Force. And
Was there an Ice Road 1?
Questions. Yes, it was.
There was. Yeah.
I can okay. Exclusively reveal there was an Ice Road 1. I have to say, I love Qui-Gon Jinn.
So do I.
He's great.
He's probably my favorite Jedi, including Kit Fisto. I absolutely adore him. I love the batshit boldness of George in The Phantom Menace in not simply going with Obi-Wan as his lead and introducing Anakin and starting the relationship off in that way. That would have been the conventional thing to do. That would have been the thing that 99 people out of 100 would have done. But George instead decided to kind of introduce this cautionary tale. And instead, I think Qui-Gon is a cautionary tale for Obi-Wan in that movie of this is what happens if you get to be a little bit too maverick. And I like the fact he's a little bit woo, a little bit wee, a little bit wee. You know, he tries to take on Watto and he does. He plays Watto at his own game. There's all the Qui-Gon.
He doesn't die because he's too maverick, though.
No, he doesn't die because he's too maverick. No, but the whole being drawn to young Anakin is because of his maverickness.
Well, and Anakin's midichlorian count, for God's sake.
It's off the fucking charts, as was a quote that was cut from the original. It's off the fucking charts.
20,000.
The thing I always loved about Qui-Gon Jinn was that he was a Northern Irish Jedi. And finally, I felt represented on screen. I saw a properly heroic character on the big screen being Northern Irish. And then I interviewed Liam about this, and he is under the impression that he is playing him as an English person.
Is
so,
he?
Yes.
Okay.
And I say no.
And
be kind.
We move on. We gloss over.
We're moving on. But he is the best thing about that film. He is by far the best performance in it. Liam, there's no nods and winks from him. He sells every line of what he's been given for
100%,
that film. And he stitches that film together and he makes it work. And if that film has any heft and gravitas, it's because of Liam.
Oh, he's the heart, without a doubt.
Yep, yeah, absolutely. There's always a bigger fish, so there is. Anakin, no! Number nine, we got Drew McWeeny to write about the hype of The Phantom Menace because it really was unlike, I think, anything I've seen before or since.
It was
since
the first trailer I sought out on the internet to download.
Yeah.
On dial-up.
Yes, very much so. I was living with my parents at the time and I would occupy the phone line for 3-4 hours at a time just to download the trailer again.
The quick time video.
I had booked an excursion to New York with a comic book store in Belfast. Was the Talisman at the time, now Forbidden Planet. And they were sending a whole bunch of people. A whole bunch of people were meant to be flying over to New York to go and see The Phantom Menace for the first time because it opened in the States 2 months before it opened in the UK.
Yeah.
And then sadly that trip fell apart. But I was even in my local newspaper. I was interviewed for my local newspaper because I was flying to New York to go and see The Phantom Menace and how excited I was. And I was standing in front of the poster with Jake Lloyd and the Vader shadow.
Great poster.
Great article in the local newspaper, if you're wondering if they were strapped for news that week. Man goes to see film. Jesus Christ, have you seen this? There's a man going to see a film. Fucking front page news. Front page news.
But it's why we did that little story. I mean, so Drew McWeeny used to write for Ain't It Cool News, which was probably the biggest source for like daily Star Wars content back then. And we were excited not just in that cycle of the hype of the film coming out, but we've been waiting since 1983, was it, when Jedi came out?
Yeah.
For like, when's it going to happen? Is it going to happen? And just the years of anticipation culminating in that, you know, the few months before that came out was none like anything else.
True. Sorry, just reading the opening line to your Natalie Portman piece, which is next because Natalie Portman is next as Amidala.
Yeah, we got Natalie Portman. I, like you were saying before, James, I don't know if she's done an interview exclusively about Star Wars.
I haven't read it.
Since Star Wars. And it's fascinating to talk to her about it now. I think time passing has enabled these people to look back on their experiences with fondness and warmth and to size up how incredible it was for them and, you know, what it all means today and how they have been embraced by a different generation and how why there is so much to enjoy about them, which is what we've done. And Natalie Portman spoke about those films with fondness and warmth and sized it all up a bit. You know, she went to Harvard. As soon as Phantom Menace came out,
she's like,
that's it. I'm going off to study and study psychology for 3 or 4 years at Harvard. And she made Attack of the Clones and Revenge of the Sith literally in her school holidays. And we spoke about that and about the double life that she led because she was this diligent sort of student, almost undercover at Harvard, going under her birth name, Natalie Hershey, I think. And then in the meanwhile, these incredible phenomenons were being released around the world. And she was just like, I'm undercover, like Padme at university. And then come out and do some press for these mad films.
Where is Padme?
Did Keira Knightley turn up to lectures for her?
Keira Knightley did the interview, actually.
Number seven, real quick. Leonardo DiCaprio's shopping spree, because apparently he was obsessed with buying shit. So was Ryan Reynolds. Ryan Reynolds has a really good story about going to see Phantom Menace.
When Chris is buying shit, he means Star Wars merchandise.
Yes.
And Leonardo DiCaprio was, by all accounts, up for Anakin Skywalker and turned it down.
Number six, Duel of the Fates. Da-da! Da, da, da.
It's an incredible piece of music. It charted as well. I think it was number one.
Was it?
When it came, yeah, it literally,
they released
it as a single.
It was never number one.
I'm saying it was.
It was never
I'm
number
saying
one.
It
Maybe
was.
In the classical charts?
No, but it made the actual chart charts. I don't know where it ranked.
And
it
now in number 37, good. It's John Williams with Duel of the Fates.
Had a great video. With the fight in it. It's a great piece of music. Also, it deviates from the traditional John Williams score as well. Like, it feels distinct and unique. And that fight was something in particular. Like, George obviously had that thing, as I'm sure you know. Like, in Star Wars, he intercuts two sequences. In Empire Strikes Back, he intercuts three sequences. Mm-hmm. In Jedi, it's like four sequences. You know, it's in keeping with that.
12 sequences.
It's like 157 sequences. But, you know, the fact that two of those sequences are not good does take some of its energy away. But even with that, this is the greatest lightsaber battle in history.
You've said that several times. You're trying very much to put that across as an objective statement.
It's an axiomatic
statement.
Truth.
Yeah, it's not.
Much of it because of that score.
Yes.
That score is
it does
in
a lot
my
heavy lifting.
It's such an incredible piece of music. Yes. My microwave at home, when it beeps, this is a true story. This
it goes,
is so pathetic. No, when it beeps, it goes, boop, 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 boop. And every single bam, time, bam. I continue into
the. Oh, yeah. The number one hit, Duel of the Fates.
Little Johnny Williams at number 37.
Little Johnny Williams. My word. This is, weirdly, to this day, the song that Tottenham Hotspur FC walk out to at their stadium before a game.
Duel of the Fates?
Yep.
Really?
Did not know that.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Number five, the Pod Race.
Pod Race is very
Ichuba.
Because the Phantom Menace obviously has some pacing issues and it sags quite heavily in the middle, but the Pod Race is a highlight of that whole
Brilliant.
Tatooine sequence. So.
Brilliant choreographed.
Fabuloso.
Yeah. Brilliantly directed. I mean, you can tell, I mean, look, he was a petrol head, isn't he?
Yeah, George very much so.
But it works.
Yeah, it
but
does.
But it works. It's incredible. It's really, really exhilarating. And it is funny. So Bulba's fucking brilliant.
Yeah.
Little bastard.
Mm-hmm. Ichuba. Anyway, number four. Darth Maul's terrifying visage. So this is a piece about Darth Maul's face.
So yeah, it's the whole... So in the trailer, we had that moment where you see the doors open. So the beginning of the Duel of the Fates sequence, where you see him reveal himself, his Zabrak tattoos and his horns and stuff. And then when he ignites the other... Because he's fought with the lightsaber before in the film. Like he's fought with Qui-Gon in the desert, but he's only used half of his lightsaber. But when he ignites the other end, that was the first time we'd ever seen a variation on the traditional sort of sword lightsaber, the longsword lightsaber. And people lost their absolute shit at who he was, at like we'd never seen this species before. He's got a double-ended lightsaber. He looks like
Steady.
An absolute monster. That was that's a hell of a moment.
So Helen spoke to Ian McCaig, who was the concept artist who designed the evolution of Darth Maul's face. So we've got in the magazine, I think, four or five different versions of what that character looked like before he came to be the red and blacked monster that we all know and hate.
We should say that this, the 25 things we, 20 or 25, not just the 25 things, there are more things, but these are the 25 things we focused in on. This is not in order of import necessarily. So it's not necessarily a countdown. So whenever I say that Boss Nass is at number three, that doesn't mean that we think that Boss Nass is the third best thing about the prequels. It just means that Alex was panicking when he did the flat plan and
no,
and put it down here and just a random.
The truth is, come on, we all love Brian Blessed.
Who's the boss?
And when I first sat down with Nick and said, like, watch what would be on our wish list, I think Brian Blessed was one of the first things I said because how can you not missed the opportunity to speak to Brian Blessed, number one. And, you know, that character is ridiculous, but it's fun and it's funny and he goes for it. So John Nugent spoke to Brian Blessed. We probably needed 20, 25 minutes. Brian Blessed gave him an hour and it was an absolute riot. The highlights of it are in this interview. It's a lot of fun.
Peace! The final line of The Phantom Menace.
It's a shocking final. Shot,
but again, my favourite Star Wars fact of all time is that the celebration music is the Emperor's theme in a major key, which is made. So obviously the Emperor's keen in a minor key, whereas at the end it's
because he's got the last laugh.
Yeah, exactly. So it's just his theme in a major key. So it just slides under the radar,
and he's there watching it all. Like, you know,
exactly.
We'll watch over your career
with
great
interest.
Yeah.
Number two was the poster. It was the original teaser poster for The Phantom Menace.
Legendary.
Jake Lloyd standing in front of a Tatooinean homestead and casting Darth Vader's shadow.
Brilliant poster. So we spoke to the lady who designed that poster, and that image, that iconic silhouette, leads into the shoot we did with Hayden Christensen, who's number one.
Yes, indeed.
Was the first question Hayden asked you was, are you an angel? Even though it's Jay Lloyd.
Yes, that's right. So we finished off, or we begin, actually, with an interview with Hayden Christensen, who, of course, played Anakin in, oh, what's the film called?
Attack of the Clones
and Revenge of the Sith. And, you know, and over the years has had, like us, a complicated and sometimes tortured relationship with these films. But, like us, has now found peace.
Peace!
And thanks to his appearance in Obi-Wan Kenobi.
Obi-Wan Kenobi.
Do you know, we haven't actually done as bad as I thought.
We've been quite restrained.
Christ, really?
Yes, this is restrained, Alex. And of course, Ahsoka. You know, he has, I think he's found his love of Star Wars again. And I having been to celebrations, a couple of celebrations,
they
and kind of
him.
Seen how he is held, he's just held in high regard and revered by a lot of the fan base, a lot of whom are the people I spoke about at the beginning of this show. You know, the people who grew up with these prequels and think they're better than everything else.
So Amon Warman did this fantastic interview. He had an hour with Hayden from his home in Toronto, I believe. And Hayden was, you can tell that he's very, very, you know, he's very sensitive, but he's very thoughtful. He's very insightful about it all. And you can tell that he really had quite the experience on these films. You know, he really went through it and he gave it everything he got. And then he got sort of burnt by it, no pun intended. And he's come out the other side. And now he's seeing it being, you know, embraced more than it ever was before, and he's looking at it really fondly, and he talks about it all. He talks about it very candidly. It's a beautiful interview, and we did this incredible shoot with him.
Did he at a point go, I couldn't have. No!
Well, that was James L. Jones, I think you'll find.
Yes. Master his horror.
I think you'll find.
I where is Padme?
No, I saw her.
I couldn't have.
She was there a minute ago.
All right, okay. That is, I think we have successfully talked about the Star Wars prequels, and it is just the center of an incredible issue of Empire. There are other many, many wonderful things. As Chris Evans once said, there's a lot of great stuff inside the issue, and he wasn't lying. He wasn't lying when he said it. And he wasn't lying now when he didn't say it. So there's other stuff in there. Let me see. There's Back to Black. We have a feature on Back to Black, the Amy Winehouse biopic. We have a feature on Three Body Problem, the big old Netflix show. We have a feature on Love Lies Bleeding, Rose Glass's new film. In my section, the best section, Final Cut, we have J.A. Bayona on Society of the Snow. We have the ranking of the Scream movies. We have Lee Child on Reacher in the news section. We have Civil War, Alex Garland's Civil War, Catherine Newton, Godzilla, X-Kong, The New Empire, because we love films that have the word empire in them, Abigail, Giancarlo Esposito is The Pint of Milk, and loads of reviews as well. It is a cracking issue. It is on sale right now, as I say, in all good, evil, and virtual newsagents, and we strongly suggest you rush out right away, buy an issue, read it, and then rewatch the trilogies. And yes, allow yourselves to shed a tear when Order 66 comes and Plo Koon gets plugged. Oh. Minute of silence, please, for Plo Koon.
That's enough.
All right, that is it for this very, very special prequel-centric episode of the Empire Podcast. Hope you enjoyed listening to it. All that remains now is to say goodbye to Alex Godfrey.
I'm too weak. Don't kill me. Two weeks.
It's goodbye from James Dyer.
Goodbye, Christopher. So be it. Bellend.
Oh, dear. And it's goodbye from me. I'm off to rewatch The Phantom Menace with the knowledge that Qui-Gon Jinn is English and not Northern Irish.
North of Ireland.
From the north of Ireland, as Liam might say. Yes, the ability to speak does not make you intelligent, so it doesn't. I remember now, actually, when I first became a Jedi, there was a wonderful fella. Wonderful fella had a double-edged lightsaber. That's very interesting. I obviously one of those before we did.